listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Hello, my name is Angela Christensen and I'm the Strategy Director for the pork sector here at AHDB. I'm joined by two colleagues today to discuss the potential impact of a no-deal Brexit on the UK pork industry. So today with me, I've got Duncan Wyatt, who is the Senior Market Analyst. Hello, Duncan.
Hello, Angela.
Thank you for your time today. And Liam Byrne, Head of Meat Marketing.
Hi, Angela.
So the UK pig sector produces over 900,000 tonnes of pig meat every year, and around a third of this is exported, and over 60% of that goes to the EU. Equally, we obtain about 60% of our domestically consumed pork products from the EU. So we have this tremendous amount of trade between us and the EU. For any business, any disruption to trade, especially abrupt disruption, is going to cause concern. So let's explore that in a few minutes. But to fully understand the potential impact of a no-deal Brexit, we need to look beyond that trade into the global trade flow of pig meat, because that's so important for carcass balance and to enable us to get the best value out of the whole pig. So whilst we favour the loin and leg cuts over here, the EU markets have a surplus of those. Meanwhile, in some export markets, notably China, they favour cuts we don't eat at all, like head, feet, offal. So Let's talk about this. So I'd like to start with you, Duncan, if that's all right. Can you talk us through the potential impact of a no-deal Brexit on these trade flows, please?
Well, I can try. So the EU is generally quite protectionist in terms of all meat, really, so beef, lamb and pork. And so it has external tariffs which increase the price of pork that gets imported into the EU. And in the case of pork, it's going to be, they vary on the cut, by cut, but it's around kind of 30% of the value of the product is added as an additional tariff coming
into
the EU.
So that's a nice protection for us at the moment.
Yeah, that's right. And as long as you're inside the EU, you receive an element of protection from that. And what that means is low-cost exporters in other parts of the world, like Brazil or the US, for example, it makes it more expensive for them to export pork into the EU. So in the case of a no deal, apart from all the logistical disruptions that might take place in terms of checks at the border and lorries having to have extra paperwork and things like that, at the moment, DEFRA have said that the temporary tariffs that they intend to place on trade for pork coming into the UK is only in the order of around 4%. And so what that means is those countries which are currently find it too expensive to pay the 30% tariff to get into the EU may find it appealing to pay only the 4% tariff to get into the UK.
So for the EU imports we get, it's actually a bit of a hike because there's no tariff at all, of course, at the moment.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
There'd be a little bit of a hike of 3-4%. And so in isolation, we might think, well, that's quite helpful in that if it's harder for the imports to come in, perhaps we couldn't sell more of our own products. But what you're saying there is, of course, that tariff rate applies to all countries.
Absolutely.
And therefore, what we've got to really bear in mind is those countries where pork is produced cheaper.
Yeah, so you've nailed it. In the short term, most of our pork does come from the EU, so predominantly it's from Denmark or Germany, and some comes from the Netherlands as well. So those exporters, yeah, they'll immediately face this extra 4% or 5%, depending on the product. They'll face an extra tariff coming into the UK. It's really in the longer term, I suppose, I'm thinking about when I'm saying that 4% makes the UK market a little bit more attractive to global exporters. In the short term, a product that comes in tariff-free at the moment will face a tariff.
So that's good differentiation, isn't it, between what might happen in the first few weeks, where there might be disruption, there might actually be a slight deterrent to EU product coming in.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is we really ought to be thinking beyond those first few weeks and months and strategically probably looking at what might this do to the dynamics of the market. And what we're saying is odds on the overall imbalance of tariffs. So it's going to cost a little bit more for people to bring a product in from the EU, but it's reduced the tariff from other parts of the world. What about the other way? What about trade the other way? So us exporting to the EU?
Yeah, again, most of our exports are to the EU. And so exporters right now, they can send product without facing any tariff at all, and they suddenly will find themselves outside of the EU and therefore subject to this tariff wall protection of around 30% on the product. So yeah, that will make trade with the EU more expensive. So an important part of that, for example, again, you talked about carcass balance a few moments ago. An important part of that, for example, will be culled sows. While they're only relatively small number compared to the number of clean pigs we kill, it's an important trade that we don't have a lot of demand for that kind of meat here. And so that product doesn't really have a home in the UK, and so that will need to go to the EU. Having said that, in terms of the final cost, you know, the final contribution that disposing of culled sows makes to the cost of production, it's relatively small. And so it's not insurmountable by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, certainly a logistical hiccup, shall we say.
And I guess the other factor that comes into all this is the exchange rate and what that does.
Yeah, and so in a lot of the modelling we've done, and a lot of analysis we've done, we try to hold exchange rates steady. I accept that that's a bit of a limitation on the analysis, but we're not currency traders. The generally accepted view is that the pound will weaken, which all other things being equal would make UK exports more attractive. But who knows really what the future holds? And certainly, you know, exchange rate markets will have a certain amount of a likelihood of a hard Brexit already built into them. And so how much more it weakens, you know, who knows?
Okay, so I've heard a few things from you there that probably from a producer's perspective, if I was sitting there, I'd say, hang on a minute, there might be some short-term disruption, there might be some delays at ports and so on. How can I best be ready for that? Presumably that's about contingency plans to hold a few more pigs on site, on my farm, if there is any disruption to trade, and that just takes some time to smooth out.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, as part of the, my understanding is that a part of the Red Tractor accreditation is that those contingency plans should be in place anyway, and that probably would be more, you know, possibly more applicable in the case of a disease outbreak, something like that. But ultimately, you know, those contingency plans really should be in place anyway, so it's a question of dusting them off and just being ready in case there is some disruption to your supply chain. I would say advice would be talk to your buyer and have as much information as far ahead as possible to try and get a sense of what's going on to help you make decisions on a day-to-day basis.
And I think that's how it will be, won't it? It will be about that communication between you and your buyer and making sure that we avoid any health and welfare issues or overcrowding issues.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's difficult. This is a just-in-time business. It is particularly difficult for this sector. So let's just go a bit further afield. China. I mean, here we have a country that very sadly is really struggling with African swine fever. The production has dipped enormously. They've lost maybe half their pigs. The production will go down by about a third. That's created this enormous protein gap. Is that going to be helpful to us as we ride the difficulties potentially between trade between the EU and the UK? Is that going to be helpful?
I think there's no question that that is going to go some way to offsetting the difficulties that leaving the EU without a deal might bring. So China is a huge consumer of pork. Of course, it's also a huge producer of pork as well. So it produces in the order of, you know, in excess of 50 million tonnes of pork itself, and it probably imports maybe 2 or 3 million tonnes typically. And so to lose that many pigs and that amount of production clearly is going to create a huge deficit in terms of pork protein. I think a lot of the forecasts suggest it could be 10 to 12 million tonnes, which actually is more than global pork trade. So it's a big hole, actually.
It's unspannable, isn't
yeah,
it, in
that's
the
right.
short to medium term.
And we've seen them increase production in fish and chicken, for example. They're importing more pork, they're importing more beef and more lamb as well, although they're typically more expensive proteins as well. So yeah, in terms of the timing, it is a helpful time for a huge outlet for UK pork, potentially. And already exports to China have increased significantly.
Yeah, even into whole carcasses now, which is pretty exciting, isn't it? Because previously we've rather focused on the fifth quarter and offal and so on, and this is quite a significant change, isn't it?
Yeah, to my mind it really is, because, you know, we often think about carcass imbalance, and in China, I don't really think there is too much of a carcass imbalance in China, because they clearly consume the whole animal. You know, they don't export very much pork at all. But what they do want is additional bits, which we've been supplying so far. And so,
and they really relish those. I mean, having been out there a couple of weeks ago, you know, they absolutely relish those. And I think there's such a fantastic synergy with our market and where we could go with that.
I think so too. But the interesting thing about sending whole pigs across is that that means that your demand more or less completely overlaps with their demand at that point. And so to me, we'll have to see what happens. But to me, at least, that's a real a turning point at which you say, actually, you know, it's not about carcass balance anymore. It's about volume of protein.
Yeah.
And that might be a point where our exports really start to pick up. You know,
and they have this year, haven't they? They really have moved. I mean, that's one to watch, obviously. So critically there, we must stay ASF free ourselves in order to carry on benefiting from all the trade we do. I mean, it's to 92 different countries around the world. It's worth $500 million to the industry. I mean, it's critical revenue and it's critical carcass balance, isn't it? Okay, so having talked through the markets and the possible movements, I'd like to think about the consumer now. So here we are, Liam. I'll bring you in on the conversation just now. So we've heard from Duncan that, you know, actually there could be some pretty seismic changes happening already in global trade. We know that our pig price is a function of those global trades. So it could well be that our producers are, at least in the medium to longer term, are faced with greater competition. And obviously what we want to know is what will the consumer think? What will the consumer think? Let's talk about the domestic consumer here in the UK.
Sure. So when I put my consumer hat on then, there are three major trends influencing behaviours when consumers are out shopping for food. So the first of those would be health. So that would be low in fat or lean cut meats. Second would be ease. So that's largely around quick or easy to cook meal solutions, especially through the week. And then the third is around taste. So that's not just about flavour, but that's people looking for things that are suitable for the whole family. And I think what's important is that deal or, and certainly in no deal, actually we don't anticipate these consumer trends to change. So when people are out shopping, when they're looking to buy their meats, they will be looking for these same properties in what they're buying. So
that's interesting. What you're saying there is that, you know, whatever happens, the consumer's probably going to hold that same perspective where price, convenience, taste and the fit with their lifestyle is king. So we've got to keep focusing on that because it is our most valuable market, our domestic market, and it possibly is quite vulnerable, isn't it? If, for example, no deal were to change the standards to which food is allowed to be imported, there's a lot of talk around that. But what you're saying is actually that's all noise to the consumer. That's all background noise. What they care about is their family and the fit, in this case, of pork to their weekly or daily routine.
And of course, price will continue to be an influencer in terms of what goes into shopping baskets. But what we see in the event of a no deal is that health, ease and taste will continue to be drivers of what people are putting in their shopping baskets.
And so what are we doing to get to know those customers a little bit more, to be able to speak to them and put pork front of mind in their lifestyles?
Yeah, so as part of developing our marketing calendars, we always start with the consumer and we end with the consumer. So we start with the consumer in terms of insights. We do a lot of work around trying to understand who our most lucrative groups of consumers are, and that might be largely by kind of attitudinal changes, so long-term attitudinal changes towards meat and eating meat. And we look at the long-term kind of macro trends in terms of what's influencing their behaviours. And then what we do is then we design a campaign then specifically around their needs, because ultimately if you can match against a consumer need, then you will start to drive the change in behaviour, which builds the advocacy in your space.
Because obviously there's a lot of talk at the moment about the pressures on meat production, and we talk about veganism and vegetarian, but actually my understanding is that those sectors are not particularly growing. What is growing is a greater interest in the flexitarian diet and mixing up and achieving a balanced diet for your family. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what has grown in that space, innovation. There's a lot of innovation in the plant-based space. And what we're seeing is that meat eaters are increasingly buying into that. So the actual percentage of plant-based eaters buying plant-based products is only about 15%, which means 85% of those products are being bought by meat eaters.
Okay, so it's about wanting something inspirational for their meal, whether that be on their own or with their family or with their partner. They want something inspirational.
That's it.
People are looking to fit with their lifestyle.
That's it. And it, that kind of innovation space, if you look at the plant-based arena, fits the box in terms of perception, certainly in terms of health. Often it's easy and often it's tasty.
So Liam, we've talked about inspiring consumers around pork. Can you tell us what we're doing right now?
Yeah, sure. So we're back on TV. We're back on TV right now, actually, and then we're back on again in January with our midweek meals campaign focused on pork medallions, and then just linking back into the consumer insights that we spoke about at the beginning. The TV ad very much focuses on the health credentials of pork, the ease of cooking, and of course the taste and the flavour. And then we do a lot of work in the background around pork and specifically in health and promoting the health benefits of pork.
And all this work we're doing, we know it makes a difference, don't we, Liam? Because I believe last year that the attitude towards consuming pork midweek, now 10% more of the population believe that's relevant to them. Is that right?
As I say, evaluation is a big part of what we do and it helps us continually improve what we do. So we're currently in year three of the three-year campaign. And since we've started measuring consumer attitudes towards pork as suitable for a midweek meal, because traditionally pork was always seen as something you put out on a Sunday. So that we saw the midweek meal space as a big opportunity for pork. And since we've started measuring attitudes over those 3 years, we've positively moved attitudes towards pork as suitable for a midweek meal by 10 percentage points.
So that's a real shift, and presumably that shift in attitude carries on outside of the retail space into the out-of-home market as well. So people buying products for breakfast and so on, presumably, I know we've done well out of the habit, the growing habit for people eating breakfast out of the home. So if you change the attitude, presumably the effect of that spreads way beyond your campaign time and your campaign space, which may be quite retail focused.
That's right. I mean, we call it kind of a halo benefit. So whilst we might focus specifically on pork medallion, the reality is then there are other cuts and areas of the pig that will benefit from people buying into pork. The first job to be done is to get pork back onto people's menus at home.
So you say that halo effect, and I know that we measure household penetration of pork, so the percentage of households buying pork, and we expected it by now to have declined to something like 67.5%. But in fact, it's 71%, isn't it?
Yeah, you've been doing your homework.
I know, yes. Yeah. So, I'm interested in this stuff.
We've seen over the last 3 to 5 years, we've seen a steady decline in pork in people's households, the number of households buying pork. And if you were to track that decline over the 3 years, in year three, we'd be sitting around about 67, 68%.
That's year three of our campaign.
Of our campaign. Yeah. So this year, we'd be seeing about 67, 68% of UK households that would be buying pork at some time. What we've been able to do is been able to halt that decline and actually kind of steady it off. Mm-hmm. So we're holding firm at around about 70% currently.
Yes. So we use all sorts of channels, and that includes social media, where we're appealing to a younger audience and so on. So we're just trying to be as creative as possible to get pork front of mind.
That's it.
So what I'm hearing there is the consumer's going to carry on buying what fits best with their life. So I just want to come back finally to Duncan and just think from a producer perspective. I know we've done some work to look at the potential longer term impacts of some of the tariffs you were talking about and the balances, the potential competition from countries producing pork at a cheaper price than we can here for all sorts of animal welfare standard reasons and planning permission reasons, environmental reasons. We have extremely high standards here and that costs. So if we look out to 2022, which was when the modelling was done, my understanding is for the pig sector, it did look tighter. I mean, it looked like it was going to be harder.
Yeah, it did. So there are two main factors which come in play here. You might reasonably expect there to be a bit of an incumbent advantage in terms of exporters in the early days. So obviously trade relationships do exist between European exporters and UK importers for pork and things like that. But over time, you would expect new supply sources to open up. And so the modelling kind of shows that the global price for pork was below the UK price for pork at that point, and therefore that would weigh on the UK price. So you might expect returns to producers to be a little bit lower in the future. The other important factor was really to do with the movement of labour.
And the costs associated.
Yeah, absolutely. And on pig units in particular, labour is a really important part of their costs. Mm. So, you know, feed is obviously the overwhelmingly large portion of the cost. And there might be some positive things to say about that. But it's really labour where they feel the pinch, and the modelling, you know, the assumption that we've used is that the cost of that labour goes up by as much as 50%. That's a forecast, of course, and so we don't know exactly what will happen, but that's kind of the basic assumption.
And that's labour throughout the supply chain, isn't it? I mean, it may not be occurring on a farm, it could be occurring in a plant, in a cutting plant.
Yeah, that's right. In terms of that modelling, that's specifically about on-farm labour. But the whole supply chain is relies on really heavily imported EU labour.
I mean, at the moment, we've got the feed price going in our favour, and that's helpful. The pig price is going up slowly in reaction to the Chinese market and other export pulls. So after feed, the biggest cost is labour. And I guess then, you know, there's other inputs, variable costs that may rise depending on our exchange rate and so on. So there's lots of moving parts. It sounds like the least moving part is probably the attitude of the consumer, and we've got to continue to address what is needed to be inspiring in our offering and making sure that we are a relevant and enticing prospect for that family occasion. On the market side, there seems to be masses moving. And I guess for an individual producer, it would be about taking the advantages where we can for us as an organisation to continue to optimise all the markets so we can sell every part of the pig at the optimum price.
Yeah.
And then to the extent there is some profit in that, to look at investing for the longer term when we may have fiercer competition. In other words, to invest to get that efficiency of production up.
Yeah.
So that we're as fit as we can be to compete in that marketplace.
Yes.
So there are opportunities, but there are certainly some challenges. Possibly, I mean, certainly if it comes abruptly as a no deal at the end of October, that's an awful lot for a just-in-time industry to get used to. But we'll work together. It will be about communication in the industry, and we'll try and make the best of whatever is there. So with that, I'll say a very big thank you to Duncan and Liam, my expert colleagues. It's fantastic what you and your teams do. I'm always asking you awkward questions, and I think the more questions we are able to ask and answer, the better prepared we will be.
Thanks, Angela.
Hopefully today's discussion with Angela, Duncan and Liam has shed some light on what our pork market might look like over the coming weeks and months. We have a number of resources to help you prepare for the 31st of October and beyond, which explain in more detail about the impact, for example, on the cull sow market and how to put contingency plans in place. We also have a dedicated team to answer any burning questions you may have. You can get in touch by emailing brexit.questions@ahdb.org.uk. In today's show notes, you'll find links to all these resources, as well as to our dedicated Brexit pages. And finally, it's also worth keeping a lookout for some of our upcoming events, as we're running a number of workshops to help you identify and manage some of the key challenges facing your business. That's all for today. Thank you for listening, and if you haven't already done so, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes.